yeah, welcome back. Obviously came in a year ago. Could you just introduce yourself, like who you are, what you do, for those people who don't know what you do?
Absolutely. So my name's Katie Maycock. I'm the founder of two businesses, Get Your Shit Together and Gist. Gist only really exists because some corporate companies don't like the word shit when I come in. So I've just created a little bit of an acronym of Gist. But essentially both of the businesses are solely created to work with individuals and organizations, helping them lay a rock solid wellbeing foundation to ensure that they can rock up as the best versions of themselves, whether that's at work or at home. And one of the key areas that we focus on is preventing burnout. And if we have to help people overcome it, we also help people overcome it.
Cool. So, because you know, a lot of people like myself, I've done reading on burnout. I'm pretty sure I've suffered it from myself. A lot of people don't really understand what it is. And, you know, there's so much stuff about it, but there's also a lot of crap about it as well, right? And very misleading stuff. Yeah. So could you, for everyone, including myself, could you just define and clarify what burnout is?
Yeah, so I'll go against the World Health Organization if I can. So if you Google the World Health Organization, and I'll clarify what I mean in a second, but essentially what burnout is, it's physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion, all three of those. So physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion from prolonged stress. And I really want to stress that prolonged stress element. It's not something that happens really quickly. It's something that's very insidious that happens over a period of time. So it can be quite difficult to know and to spot. But essentially the only precursor is stress. Now, the reason why I'm going to go against the World Health Organization is they came out and said it was a diagnosable syndrome in 2019, but they pretty much said it was only from workplace stress, which I think is really unfair to look at when realistically in the world, stress can come from anything. And it's not like your body goes and your brain and your emotions go, oh, I'm stressed from a relationship, so I'm going to have this outcome. Oh, I'm stressed from work, so therefore I'll burn out. So I just wanted to clarify that because I think that's really important.
Yeah, sorry, I just changed my mic saying that. But
not to stress.
Cool. Continue.
No, that's what it is essentially with burnout. It's just that physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion from prolonged stress.
Cool. So look, obviously this is a, you know, not a topic you can sort of summarize in a few seconds, but so with the physical, emotional, mental then, so for people in sales specifically, if I'm a salesperson and I think I might either have burnout or be getting burnout or maybe have burnout for a long time, like how can people going through those categories, what have they got to look for, be wary of? Like, yeah, could you just...
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things to understand is that burnout's a destination. So there's a journey that does precede it. And I think it's really really important to understand all the different stages for one, but also understand what that looks like throughout the stages of burnout. So there is six stages of burnout. And I know I could talk about this forever. So what I'll do is I'll try and keep it as concise as possible. But essentially when we're looking at, if we just take the physical element and we just start understanding the physical response to stress, if you take a person that is not stressed, maybe they're under pressure, but they're working really well under pressure, what's going to happen is they're physically going to feel really energized. They're going to feel very motivated. They're going to feel very like they're immunity is going really well. There's not going to be really any complaints. They're just going to feel really good. They're going to be able to physically tackle their day. They might be tired by the end of the day, but that's okay because that's just a normal human reaction. So what happens is if you are under stress for a prolonged period of time, and let's say you're a new salesperson and you've just started a new job and you're really excited about it, you're going to go in and you're going to feel energetically really well. Long hours aren't really going to hit you. Yeah, you might get tired in the evening, like I said, but it's not a huge impact. What might happen in those situations, though, is that you might change some habits. So maybe you aren't getting as much sleep as you were before. Maybe you're not going to the gym as much. Maybe you're not eating as healthy because, you know, you don't have time because you're busy and you want to hit your targets and you want to make sure that you're all there. What that does is that can take a toll on your physical well-being. And what can end up happening, you end up just getting a bit tired. And as you go through burnout, it can kind of change. So, for instance, you might find that you are really tired throughout the day. And when you go to bed, you're physically exhausted, but your brain is quite on fire. So you can't actually switch off. So it's really hard to sort of get into that sleep. Another thing that you might find is that you're waking up really exhausted, so you don't feel like you've rested very well, and that kind of just progresses as you go through. What can really happen is, as well, is if you're starting to sort of really, you know, be under stress for a prolonged period of time, obviously there's certain hormones that are going on, say cortisol and adrenaline, all that kind of stuff, it does have an impact on your physical well-being. And what ends up happening is you end up having a lowered immunity. And it's really interesting because when you're actually under stress, what happens is your immune system switches off, which is actually not a great thing, but it's going to sound really good. So what happens is, let's say you come across a virus or a bacteria, your body's not going to respond to that. So you're not going to actually feel the effects of being sick. But what will end up happening is, let's say you've worked really hard, you've hit all your targets, and then you go on holidays for a couple of days, you might find that you get sick on your first few days of your holiday, which is just so unfair, right? But that can be a symptom of you're starting to walk the fine line towards burnout. So you've got that exhaustion, you're starting to get sick. Other things that can kind of come up is inflammatory issues. So when you go too far down, you can end up with inflammatory issues. Now, inflammation is at the root of every type of lifestyle disease. So think about obesity, think about heart disease, think about strokes, think about skin issues. So things that I see are like gut health issues. So like IBS, inflammatory bowel disease, so like Crohn's, ulcerative colitis. It can impact your skin. So you might, like I did, because I've burnt out twice before, you might end up really, really bad cold sores or psoriasis, or other skin issues as well. You might find that you've gone from being able to eat whatever you want to eat and being allergic and intolerant to all these different types of foods. You might also, if you are a little bit, if you go get your blood tests and stuff, you might find that you've got high cholesterol. You might find that you have high blood pressure. There's all these different signs that it's just going to impact your body. And you might end up, if you go to the doctors, get a blood test and look at your inflammatory markers, you might have high inflammatory markers, which is not great. So that progresses until you physically can no longer really get out of bed. You physically really can't do your job. Your body is just starting to break down. And it really can be quite scary for a lot of people. The dilemma with the physical side, though, is that what people do is they focus really heavily on the physical side and they will go to the doctors. So you might go to the doctors with all these vague health issues and the doctor's like, I don't really know what's wrong with you. You might spend, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars and not be able to get a diagnosis. And I usually find that that's usually something to do with burnout or unmanaged stress.
Mm.
So that's the physical side.
So can I ask though, so how long, I know it's a bit of a question that you can't be too specific about, but say for example you've got someone who, I don't know, let's say for example it's a grad, they've never worked, they've had a really nice 3 years at uni, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've gone on their gap year and then they come back and it's their first job, so their stress levels are like, compared to most people, are like quite low.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got like a good base level, I suppose, of stress. I don't know if that's how it works, but you know what I mean. It's sort of you're at like 5% stress. How long can it take you then? So say you went into like a really stressful recruitment role or a BDR role or whatever, how quickly can you get to burnout? Is it years? Is it weeks?
It can take months. It depends on the stress, the intensity, and your coping mechanisms. So it's not a science where we can go, every single person under this amount of stress will burn out at this time. It's like, think about going to the gym, think about when you're lifting weights. Like somebody at the gym might be able to lift 200 kilos and they're going to be completely fine. They might not walk very well the next day, but they can walk the next day. If you take somebody that's never been under that amount of stress, they're going to buckle. Do you see what I mean? So it can it depends on your coping mechanisms. And one thing that I always talk about when it comes to stress, every single person has developed their own coping mechanisms, their own resilience because of the challenges that they've gone through, whether they've been really big challenges, small challenges, it doesn't matter. So we've all learned our own coping mechanisms and we've all learned our own resilience, because every single step that each one of us has taken is unique to us. And so it's really hard to give you a definitive answer, but I've seen people burn out within months, but it's insidious. It can take years. So you might just have a few little symptoms here and there, and you might not really pay attention by, you know, in 18 months' time, it might be really, your body might be really screaming at you. And that's something that stress does. One of the biggest things that's the easiest to find out if you're stressed is listen to your body. Listen to it and understand what's going on with it.
Mm. And I suppose it can be quite hard to do if you're not aware of what burnout is.
I think the other thing is as well, we don't have time to really just go, how am I physically doing today? I'm just really tired. Well, everyone's really tired. So like, off I go. Like, we don't really take that step back and think, oh, actually, this is quite wrong. Like, for instance, I would say I was creating habits of burnout from as early as 15, but I never really truly burnt out until I was 25. But if I think about the cycle of like going to school, I'd go to school, take a holiday. I'd restore my energy, go back to school. Same thing with uni, right? But the minute I had a full-time job, I didn't have that reset to sort of get through it. I feel like I just went off a tangent just then, but you're so welcome.
No, it's good. It's good because obviously it covers the physical side of things. Just before we move on to like emotional and mental, like how long does it take to recover from burnout on like average though?
Okay, so this is the biggest dilemma. So the research is saying 11 weeks, but that's taking an average, right? So you could take somebody, maybe someone has maybe just like just burnt out and maybe they've got all the resources that they need that can fill their cup. They have the capacity to quit their job, work on themselves, understand their stress. They might recover quite quickly. Or if you're somebody that doesn't have the luxury to be able to take time off work and completely remove all stress and kind of take that step back going, how do I deal with stress? How could I deal with it better?
Yeah.
It can take a while. So to put this into context, I've seen people overcome burnout within 4 months. I've seen people take 8 months. I've seen people take 12 months and I've heard of 18 months. So it's really dependent on you. And I think one of the biggest discrepancies is a lot of people will just go, I'm burnt out. So they take time off work, but then they don't do any of the other work. They don't take a step back and go, what were my triggers? How did I respond? What were my coping mechanisms? Could I be doing that better?
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is what I've always found really interesting because I think I've seen you talk about this before as well. But I'm like, when people say, oh, you recover from burnout in 11 weeks, I'm like, what? So for me to recover from burnout, I have to go to Thailand for 11 weeks and sit on a beach for 11 weeks straight to recover. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but then you're going to get cyclical burnout, right? Because then you're going to come back and do the same thing again because you've not learned
and
the new skills that you need.
Take like 3 months off everything.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why I say the luxury, if someone has all the resources in the world where they can do that, it doesn't matter though. So here's the thing. You might take off, maybe you have a sabbatical, maybe you've got time saved up from work, maybe you've got some money saved and you can take that 3 months or 4 months off, right? But let's say all you do is just physically trying to restore yourself, but you don't do any of the other work.
Yeah.
Then you're going to burn out again. And we're going to, I mean, cyclical burnout is a massive problem, especially with people in sales. So a lot of the times with people in sales, they burn out, they blame their job, they quit. Then what do they do is they're like, well, I'm really good at sales. So I'm going to go back into sales and do the same thing again in 18 months.
Mm.
And so then it becomes a cycle. Because it's not always necessarily a toxic workplace. It's not always a bad job. It's not always sales. It's just the way you might be doing sales. It might be the way you're doing things.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
People, but we just got to cover all bases here.
I suppose it's sort of like, it's a bit like dieting. You know, people who struggle with their weight, they'll just massively slash their calories. But half the problem is actually their relationship with food, their relationship with themselves, that kind of thing.
And then
they're not able to, like, it's not sustainable because they might lose the weight initially, but then in 6 months time assume when they get off this Atkins diet or whatever they're doing, the fundamental problems aren't unfixed.
Yeah, and that's definitely the biggest problem when it comes to burnout. So what we do with Get Your Shit Together is we break it down into building you up like physically. So we want to make you physically resilient because at the end of the day, stress has such a profound impact on your physical well-being. So we want to make sure that you're doing all the simple things that we all get told to do. Make sure you exercise, make sure you get enough sleep, make sure you're eating healthy food, make sure that you're, you know, taking breaks, getting downtime in. That's one element. And that's like just giving you just a small amount of capacity to do the other work, which is then building up that resilient mindset, which is not white knuckling stress, but really understanding your relationship with stress and understanding how you can break that down and understand what's a better coping mechanisms. What are my behaviors? What are my habits that I've got when it comes to stress? We've all got them. Our stress responses are typically a habit. We don't really think about it. It's like, oh, I'm stressed out. I'm going to do this. We can figure it out. Like, I'm really stressed out. And by like, next thing you know, you're like scrolling through Instagram or LinkedIn, or you're binge watching TV, or you're procrastinating, or you're getting frustrated and you're getting mad at the wrong people, and taking it out on people. Do you see what I mean? It's really easy to sort of fall into that. But until you understand your own stress, understand your triggers, why that triggers you, and how you can perceive it differently, because again, it's the perception of stress that can really impact us. And if we can change our responses, if we can change our habits and change our behaviors, that's going to actually prevent us from burning out again. And it's going to allow us to manage stress a little bit more effectively. We can't get rid of stress. That's just unreasonable. But what we can do is we can choose to perceive it differently and choose to react to it differently.
Mm. Cool. That was really, really interesting. So you were going through clarifying burnout and the signs. So we did physical.
Yep.
We all got emotional and mental. So could you sort of...
Okay, yeah. So... the emotional side to stress, and we're going to look at this. Some people might relate to it better as sort of thinking about like mental health and our emotions, because I'm going to tie it with that one, because the mental is a little bit different. And when I talk about mental, I'll make that a bit more clear. But just for this conversation, think about your emotions. So when we're thinking about emotions, we're thinking about stress, we're thinking about anxiety, we're thinking about like happiness, sadness, all that kind of stuff, right? So if we go back to the person that's just started a sales role, and we think about how emotionally they're doing. Emotionally, they're probably excited. They're probably motivated. They're probably driven. They're probably, quite happy-go-lucky. They're trying to do all the right things, right? So they're doing all these. So they're emotionally just actually quite well. Their cup is quite full. So they're not really having those reactions to stress that we all might have. Now, as we sort of progress through, let's say we've got a stressor coming in and we don't deal with that, and it's constantly on there, it kind of rubs those kind of nerves a little bit raw. And what can end up happening is we can end up going from being really cool, calm and collected to being quite frustrated and angry outwardly to people when we've never really done that before. So maybe we've got a shorter fuse. Or on the other side, you might be somebody that was really bubbly, really outgoing, really engaging and all that kind of stuff. And then you start to withdraw. You really don't want to hang out with people. You're not really adding anything to the team. Maybe you're not going out and seeing friends as much. Maybe you're just finding like you just want to get into your own little silo and not really, really go out from it. And that, or you can do a bit of both. You might actually be somebody that sort of goes into both depending on where you're at. So that's one element. And then that can end up progressing into sort of more anxiety, that sort of element of, panic attacks can kind of happen. I unfortunately suffered from panic attacks really badly when I was burnt out. I had no idea what they were. I knew what they were, but I didn't understand them. I was like, I know I'm having a panic attack, but I have no idea why. Mm. So that was definitely, that happened to me. And I see that a lot with my clients. The other thing when you get really far down the track, and this is quite a scary thing for a lot of people, and this is why burnout and depression can sometimes be either go hand in hand or it can be quite difficult to sort of tease them apart, is because there's an apathy there. So you can find what happens is you get so overwhelmed emotionally, you've not dealt with your stress, and it's like your brain just goes, bro, you know what? We're going to just chill for a bit. I'm just going to shut everything down. You know what? Let's not care about having a shower. Let's not care about calling that client back. Like, let's not care about emailing that person back. Let's not worry about mom and dad and even just yourself, right? Like eating and all that kind of stuff. And that's quite a scary place to be for a lot of people, especially if you've gone from really driven, motivated, engaged, having fun. And then, months, if not years later, you're in this, like you're a shell of yourself. And with the apathy piece, I want to make it really clear. It's not that you don't care, because that can be quite scary. It's like, well, I used to really care about things. And it's like, where did that go? It's not about that. It's actually the fact that you don't have the capacity to care. Right. And so really understanding that. But when we get to the emotional side, you can end up, especially in burnout, you can actually end up flipping between anxiety and then going into apathy. And that kind of cycle goes through each other, and that can be quite as exhausting at the end of the day. It's like you get so anxious that your brain goes, I'm so overwhelmed, let's shut down, let's be apathetic for a little bit. Okay, I filled my cup just a smidge. Okay, let's go back to anxiety. And it's just that really dangerous flip-flop. So that's sort of the emotional side, which can be really scary.
Mm. That's interesting as well, like what you just said there about it's recharging enough to like start doing stuff again, and then you just waste that energy and you go back to recharging. Yeah, I can.
Yeah, because anxiety is something, it's one of them, it's so exhausting. If you've ever suffered from anxiety, and we're talking, and you can look at anxiety as a state or a trait, so meaning you can be a state in anxiety, so there's something directly in front of you that's causing that anxiety. Or you can have a trait where you can be somebody, we might call them, oh, just an anxious person, but if you do say that to yourself, please stop saying that to yourself, because it becomes really difficult for you to overcome your anxiety. But it's that anxiety where you can wake up in the morning and like be anxious for absolutely no reason. You could find a reason if you chose to, but there's no specific reason directly in front of you on why you're anxious. But it is so exhausting because your body is on edge. Your brain is feeding you all this information. You're constantly aware and you're trying to tell your brain, that's not real. That's not a real thought. That's irrational. Okay, I understand we should worry about that, but that's not important. It's so exhausting to have to self-coach yourself. And so what happens is you get tired, so you get to apathy, and then comes back to anxiety. It's so annoying. So annoying.
So is that maybe I've misunderstood this, but in terms of the three categories, mm-hmm. is emotional and mental then like the same thing, or is there still another layer to it? Is this what you're getting to? Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why when we talk, so that's why I say emotional is like, think about that, like the mental health that we might view as mental health that we've all been talking about for the last 5 to 10 years. The mental side, what we're actually talking about is sort of that cognitive function. I think mental is just easier than it, because it's like physical, mental, and cognitive functioning exhaustion. Yeah. Like it just doesn't roll off the tongue very well. But it's that cognitive function. So, for instance, let's go back again. Let's go through the story of burnout for each individual. So you're a new salesperson. You've just started a new job and your brain is on fire. You are absorbing information. You're able to action the information. You're able to plan out your information. So, you know, someone tells you to do something. You're like, yeah, this is how I'm going to do it. So it's all about you, like, you know how you're going to do it. You know what you're going to do, you know, exactly the actions you're going to take to get you there. It's that really pragmatic, proactive kind of mindset. So that would be sort of at the very beginning stages of a job. Then what happens is things start to slip. So you might become a little bit more forgetful. You might be, you know, missing words. You might have that, you start reducing that attention to detail. And I know there's a whole conversation that we could talk about neurodivergency. Having neurodivergent people. There we go. We can have a conversation about that. But this is, let's say you've gone from somebody that was very, you could remember a lot of things, starting to be a little bit more forgetful. You're making more mistakes that are just really little, but there's nothing really big. But as that stress sort of impacts you and weighs on you, what ends up happening is your cognitive function starts to decline even further. So you can really be extremely forgetful. Like you'd have things in your diary and you couldn't remember that you even put it in there. I've had people starting to write an email and have no idea, like get midway through writing an email going, what am I doing? Like, why am I writing this email? At the very final stages of burnout, or when you're actually 100% burnt out, you might be in a situation where you're reading an email and it just doesn't, like, you can read it, you can see that there's like words on the screen, but you can't turn that into anything meaningful. You can look at it and go, I have no idea what to do with that email. It's like reading a completely different language.
Sure.
The same thing can happen in meetings as well. So you could go to a meeting, you could see someone's mouth moving, you could hear the voices that they're saying, but you can't really turn that into a meaningful piece of information. And what this does is it impacts your ability to plan, it impacts your ability to execute, it impacts your ability to make decisions. Go find somebody that's extraordinarily anxious or overwhelmed or stressed and ask them to make a decision. It's just going to add more stress to them. So they're either going to make a really rash decision to be like, I don't really care about that, make a really rash decision and I don't really care about the impact, like that's future me's problem, like I'm not going to deal with that. Or they're just going to go, oh, let me think about it. I'll get back to you. And they just can't make a decision because they're just so overwhelmed because they can't get that information up to in the third part of the brain, which is where we all process information. And that's where that kind of comes into. And a lot of people feel like they've got that brain fog. They've got that, that inability to focus, concentrate like they used to. And it's really, really scary because, you know, when you're a top performer, what do you need to have? You need to be motivated. You need to be driven. You need to have the energy to be able to do it, but you also need to be able to focus and execute clearly, like effectively. Yeah. And it's so hard when you have that. So I really want to finish off with this part with, you might have the physical symptoms, but if you don't have the emotional and mental, you're not at burnout. You know, you're just sort of, you're physically sort of maybe drained, but you need to have the three categories. It's that physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion. Mm.
You're giving me flashbacks of my first like 2 years in recruitment. I'm not even joking. I actually remember it wasn't even that. I remember I had this sales job and I got fired because I couldn't function properly. But everything you were sort of saying there on the back end of like the mental side of things, it's quite interesting hearing you explain it, because I remember being in meetings and someone was saying something to me and I understood the words and I understood the sentences and they all made sense, but it was sort of like hitting there and just sort of bouncing off. And I wasn't able to take in information because I was so stressed. I wasn't able to learn the product I was selling. And then obviously, you know, 6 months down the line, they're like, how do you not know this? I remember getting like little printouts and reading them at home over and over and over again, and I was like, oh, why can't I take in this information? So based on what you're saying now, it all makes sense.
I think, and you know, I think about kids at school these days. I'm like, Jesus, like I mean, I could go into that, but we're not going to. But that's a massive problem.
Yeah, I read a stat. But again, we can't go into it because we'll be here all day. But I read. It was a stat of something like a high school kid nowadays in America has the same anxiety levels as like a mental patient in the 1960s or something.
That's nuts. I haven't read that stat, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think about just the information overload, and we can look at that as adults, right? Like, I'm going to show my age here. But when I went into recruitment for the first time, we didn't really have like smartphones. Like, I think we were like just starting to get like Blackberries, and that was kind of cool, but it wasn't as user friendly as a smartphone. And like, we didn't have the cloud. So like, we couldn't work at home. Like, we could get calls and take calls and receive calls. We couldn't really look up a client and do all of that. And, you know, we had social media, but we didn't really have like, we kind of had Instagram, but not really. We had Facebook, but like, who really went on it? Like, we didn't have this like, at like excess amount of information constantly. You know, so when I was in recruitment, I mean, I saw it as I went through. I'm like, you know, I remember when I would go to recruitment, I worked 12-hour days, but it wasn't 18-hour days. It was like, okay, I'll go in, I'll get out. But when I'm at home, I can't actually really do too much. Like, yes, I can take a call, yes, I can send an email on my phone, but it wasn't as easy it is now. Like, it's harder to retain, like, you know, to get all that information. And I kind of look at it as adults now, and especially people who are coming into new sales roles, so like the grads, the Gen Zs that are coming in. They don't have the skills that I don't know if you're a millennial, but if you were a millennial, like, we probably did have those times where we didn't have like constant information in. So we didn't grow up with that. Like, I didn't grow up with a phone. We had 4 channels on the TV and we didn't have anything else, right? Like, it was like, if there's nothing on TV, go outside and play.
Yeah.
Very different to now. So it's very interesting to see what happens with the Gen Z in the workplace. But I also think that's a massive problem, is that technology has evolved so much, and this is impacting us. And yes, it's impacting the way we work, but it's also impacting how we take in information. It's impacting how we do our downtime. It's impacting how we take our holidays, how we connect with people. All of this is going to impact our stress. So it's just things I always think about.
Yeah, no, I don't know where you were born, but I was born in 91. So I was very much a 90s baby, and I have this conversation with people all the time, especially like people in Gen Z. Like, I was having one at work the other day, and I was just explaining, like, I feel like humans, if we stopped developing technology around 2005, everyone would have been good, because we had the phones, but they weren't very good. We had the internet, but it wasn't very good, you know. And you were able to take that time off. Like you said, you get home and you're like, even if you want to work, you can't really.
Yeah.
So having that balance was so much easier to achieve. But like, I suppose two questions really. Do you feel like salespeople in like recruitment, sales, those sort of roles, do they burn out more than most? And if so, why?
If we look at just corporate, I'm not going to go into the NHS and I'm not going to look at medical because that is a different beast to deal with. But when I look at corporate, a lot of the times it is salespeople and recruitment kind of roles. And I think at the end of the day, when you really look at the types of roles, when it's a sales role or in a recruitment role, you think about stress, right? And you think about pressure. And I think we can all talk about, you know, pressure in like, it's, you know, a sales job is just meant to be stressful and whatever. I would actually argue that sales jobs are meant to have pressure, and pressure is extremely important to make sure that you can be successful. It actually is it's a very big driving force and why a lot of salespeople can be successful if you harness it in the right way. The dilemma is when pressure goes awry and then you have that stress, and we can talk about, you know, maybe I could talk a little bit about the difference between pressure and stress, because yeah. I think that could be a really good example. And then I can sort of talk about it's going to make it very, very clear when we talk about why salespeople burn out and get stressed. But at the end of the day, if we look at pressure, when you're working well under pressure, you're feeling motivated, you're feeling driven, you can concentrate, you're excitable, you're physically energized, and you also have your immune system is actually boosted as well. So you might have like a little bit of like adrenaline and cortisol, but it's actually driving you forward. And if we look at what the description of how I look at pressure, and I when I do talks, because I do a lot of public talks, I actually bring out the pressure performance curve, the bell curve, and, you know, optimal pressure and all that sort of stuff. I always look at, when we're looking at pressure, it's just think about it like this. You're working towards a goal, target, deadline, whatever it is. It could be big or small. It could be at home or it could be at work. It doesn't matter what it is. But in the sales context, you're working towards a goal or a deadline. And you know it's completely driven and determined and dictated by your own actions and behaviors. And so there's that control element. And so you know whatever energy and effort you put in, you're going to get a certain amount of, execution and performance. And obviously every single person's pressure performance curve is a little bit different, but you need pressure to be able to apply that to achieve that. If we took away all your targets, all your deadlines, all your pressures, I feel like we'd have an existential crisis in humanity, but we always need pressure, right? We always need something. Yeah. So if we go back to hunter-gatherer times, we had pressure, but it was in the forms of, okay, I have to find food, I have to find water, I have to find shelter. It's not immediate death, but it's something that if we do not resolve, it could definitely end up not great. Take the same thing in the workplace. You know, we need to work towards these things because this is how we challenge ourselves. This is how we create creativity, all that kind of stuff, right? Because if you don't have pressure, why would you have creativity to solve a problem? If that makes sense. You take stress on the other hand. It's the exact same thing as pressure. So you're working towards a goal, target, deadline, whatever it is, knowing it's completely determined by your own performance, your own actions, your own behaviors, all that kind of stuff. But the difference between pressure and stress is that you lack a resource. So if you lack a resource, what's going to happen is it's going to take away what you need to be able to do. It's going to take your resource to be able to take those actions and to have those behaviors. And those resources, I always count it in five different categories, and that can be energy. So here's the thing. You can't work under 100% pressure 100% of the time. If we just take the idea of an Alaka band, if we keep pulling the Alaka band constantly, it's going to snap at some stage, right?
Yep.
I could use a gym metaphor, but we'll use that metaphor instead. But if you kind of like pull the Alaka band, bring it back, it bounces back, right? So that's just think about pressure the same way. Put people under pressure for a period of time. Give them time to come back, restore. They're not going to have that lack of energy. They're going to be able to fill their cup up because it's sort of that bell curve that's starting to come down. If you catch it at the right time, they're not falling into stress. So that's the first category. The second category is time. If you don't give people enough time to do the actions they need to achieve those goals, targets, and deadlines, they're going to feel stress, right? And I'll talk about, like we've talked about some of the symptoms, and I'll talk a bit more about the symptoms of stress in a sec. So that's the second category. The third category is let's say they don't have the right skills. So you take a salesperson, you put them in a role and you don't train them up appropriately or properly, or they don't have enough product knowledge. For instance, yourself, you couldn't understand the product, or, you know, you take them and you want them to be at, maybe they're at a level zero, but you need them to be at a level 20, but you don't help build them to that level 20. They're not going to be able to perform. They're not going to get that sort of feedback. So when you think about when you're in a new sales role, yes, you learn from positive reinforcement, but you also learn from that feedback. But if there's a disconnect, you're not going to be able to understand what skills you need to develop. So if you lack a skill, it's going to tip you into stress. The fourth one is support. And this is a massive one, right? We talk about managers in sales roles, and I mean, managers anywhere right now. So one thing that I won't go into, but just something to think about, is that 2024 is going to be the year of leadership burnout. Leaders have got a really, they've got a really difficult job right now because a lot of them are burning out for very specific reasons. So you take a burnt out leader, they can't support their team properly, because if you've got a, let's say you've got a burnt out leader and they're apathetic, how are they meant to care about their employees? What's one of the biggest things that you need to have as a manager? You need to have empathy. How can you have empathy and apathy at the same time? It doesn't work. It's like really hard to work. So that's just one thing to think about. But also, if you're just a bad manager, right, you don't have the support, you don't, but if we just think about support in general, if you don't have support from like family, friends, other human beings or whatever it is, it's going to stress you out. And then the final one, and this is a really massive one when it comes to, and I kind of look at it into three ways, and depending how you look at it, but the final one is either a lack of finances or a lack of rewards or recognition. So sales is an interesting role because it's one of those roles where you can do absolutely everything to the T. You can follow your process to the T. You can follow the script to the T. You can make the right amount of calls that you've been told to make. You can hit all your KPIs, but it doesn't mean you're absolutely going to get that desired outcome, which is that sale, right? And then if you don't get that recognition, going like, you know what, you did a really good job. You know what, we understand that you worked really hard. So sorry you didn't get that sale. You're going to feel pretty crappy and it's going to drain you. So it's going to drain that purpose. It's going to be like a lack of confidence, and that's really going to impact you. I mean, finances is a big one, which is a lot of people are struggling with right now. If you don't pay salespeople enough base salary, how are they meant to survive before they can get their commissions and all that kind of stuff? Like, we could go really into the depths of that, but I don't, that's a different podcast for a different day. But then I think there's also that recognition of just doing a good job. I think that's really important. And I think sales is an interesting role because the numbers can tell. Like, the numbers can tell. So if your numbers are going up and you're making more sales, obviously you're doing a good job. But if you're not making those sales, you must be doing a bad job in sales. But if you're burnt out, it's just going to be this vicious cycle, right? You're not going to be able to achieve the sales targets that you're going to want to have. You're not going to have the energy. You're not going to have the time. And then you're not going to get the recognition. And then you're going to think that I'm not a great salesperson. I'm really bad at this job. And then you're going to have that negative sort of, you know, mindset that kicks in. And so when we look at the difference between pressure and stress, I know I've gone on a tangent. You're so, so welcome. when you look at the difference between pressure and stress, and when we bring in the concept of, not the concept, but the fact of burnout, it's really easy to see how and why salespeople burn out at a higher level. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
That is awesome. It's super interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting mix. It almost seems like sales is like, if you wanted to get burnout, it's a really good place to go because it's really easy. Yeah, it's like the perfect concoction, isn't it? Of like environment and targets and finance and, you know, the difficulty of the role.
It's the perfect, because I mean, you think about it. To get to your target, it's dictated on your actions and your behaviors and, you know, how much effort you put in. But sales is also one of those roles is you can do all the right things and still not get the desired outcome.
Yeah.
And then what happens is if you've got a bad manager, that's going to compound on that. But also you've got managers who are like having, I mean, we're in a recession right now. So these poor sales managers, and I'm going to give him some grace, and maybe you might hate me for giving some grace to your manager, maybe because he's a bit of a dick or she's a bit of a dick, whatever it is. But they're in a really difficult situation right now because they're trying to take care of their team, but they're getting pressure from, you know, the top down. They're getting pressure from, you know, the lead, the C-suite, or maybe they're the owners of the business and they're, you know, the sales manager as well, which is always dangerous, but it is what it is. You know, you've got outside pressure, you know, investors, you've got to hit these targets. You've got to make sure you're hitting this, you know, these targets. So you're not laying people off, and it's all put on the sales team right now. And so we're going to see, we will see more burnt out salespeople now in the next few years than we have probably before. It will get better. But if you are in a sales team, you have to make sure that you're taking care of yourself so you can work well under pressure. So really understanding when you are actually starting to slip from pressure into stress, looking at it like, what resource am I lacking right now? Am I tired? Do I have the energy to do this job? No. Okay, let's resolve that. Okay, do I have the time to do what I need to do? No, I don't. Let me talk to my manager about how can I prioritize this better? How can I take this process a little bit better? What's something that I can actually drop? Like, what is something... You know, I know when you're, you know, when you're in sales, and let's say your sales are a bit down, you might be doing all this work just to try and get that sale, those sales on. But at the end of the day, it might just be sort of, I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, like throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks. And that's just exhausting. Does that make sense? And you're not spending your time on the right thing to make sure that you're, maybe you're going to have a crappy month this month, but maybe you could be doing the right things now to like save next month and the month after. Like you've always got to be thinking further ahead. And I think it can be really easy in a sales role just to be think month to month, which is just exhausting because it feels like a treadmill.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have the skills, how can you develop the skills? What does your team and your company have in the process of actually making sure you're developing your skills? And one of those skills has to be, how do you manage stress? How do you manage pressure? How can you build up resilience? Like, they're skills that you need to develop in a sales team. And if you don't have that, like I said before, everybody's response to stress is unique to them. And if it's not serving you, you're going to burn out. So that's something else you've got to think about. That's a skill you can develop. Support, recognition, remuneration. It's very important.
Awesome. So having said all that, for people listening, what are your like top two or three tips to actually help them with burnout and stress?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to a salesperson, and I think, and anyone can take these tips. So if you are somebody that's not in sales or getting out of sales and you're like, oh, I don't want to listen. No, listen, because you can definitely use these tips as well. The first thing is understanding that burnout's incredibly insidious and it sneaks up on you. It's really sneaky. Like, you can just literally go from being like top of the world to being like, why can't I get out of bed? Why do I have a cold sore across my face? Like, why are my joints swollen? Like, what the heck is going on? It's really easy. The best thing that I would do for people is every morning, have a journal, put three categories in there, have your physical well-being, your mental well-being, and your emotional well-being. And if you just spend 3 minutes asking yourself, how am I physically doing? Rate yourself from a 0 to a 10, 10 being 100% of feeling amazing, and do that with emotional and mental, going like, how am I emotionally doing? Is there something I need to do there? How's my cognitive functioning? Like, am I focused? Like, what's going on? How am I going? Like, then you can really get an understanding of where you are. Maybe you don't have time for that. Try and make time for that. But maybe you could just do an overarching one. You can just ask yourself, how am I doing in general, 0 to 10, and score yourself. Pay attention to those scores. Maybe look after every week, after every month. If it's starting to decline in those categories, then you know you have to start taking action. So then you can do the second one if you're starting to decline, or maybe you're already declining. So the other thing that you can do is, it's a bit more work, but I think it's really important that people, and especially people in sales, because if you're, I mean, I think sales is one of those roles where you can get emotionally hijacked really quickly. And if you can manage your emotions in sales, you're actually doing a really good job and you're going to prevent burnout if you can manage your emotions really effectively. So if you're not tied to an outcome, does that, you know what I mean? Like, we've all been around those salespeople that get emotionally hijacked by their job because it's like they've tied their self-worth to their job. So what you can do to help manage that is take a step back and really think about all the things that stress you out. Write it all down. Write all your triggers down. Write all your triggers down, all the things that stress you out. Then what you're going to do is you write down everything that what you did in that response, like how did you respond to that stress? Write down every single one of your responses. It could be a habit, it could be a behavior, it could be a thought, whatever it is. Like, how did you react to that? So what was your reaction? What was your behavior? What was your habit? Whatever it was. List it all down. There's no judgment here. This is just for you and yourself to understand this. You're not going to judge yourself. But what you are going to do is you're going to go down the list and you're going to ask yourself, did that benefit me or did it limit me? So you can put a B or an L next to it. So when we're talking about benefits, when we're looking at stress, a beneficial way to manage it would be you've actually reached an outcome and you've not either delayed an outcome or you've not tried to distract yourself or whatever it is. You manage that stress. You've kind of gone through a full cycle. So that stress has now been removed. You no longer have to worry about it. You haven't done the whole future me, or you haven't like pushed it to the side, or you haven't just ignored it or whatever it is, right? So you want to understand that. And if it goes, it's benefited me, then you write down, how did it benefit you? Right? So okay. Do that. Then if it's limited you, what you want to then do is like, how could I have dealt with that differently? What would have been a better reaction? Now, you might not know the answer. I don't know. I'm overwhelmed. I'm freaking like at capacity. Don't stress. You don't have to have the answers, but just ask yourself the question and just know your brain will give you the information when you're actually at full capacity. That's what I used to do when I was really, really stressed out and burnt out when I was recovering, was like, I might not know the answer right now, but I know my brain like has my back and it will give me the information randomly. So ask yourself, what could I have done a little bit better there? And it's really that reflective piece, right? It's all about that reflection piece. This can be so powerful to actually allow you to understand how you're reacting and actually change your reactions to stress to allow you to choose a better option. And then what you're going to do is you really understand your triggers so you can actually go, oh, here we go. I've got a client screaming at me. Okay, last time I just froze. The last time I got mad. Last time I made him talk to my manager. I was like, how could I deal with this differently? Okay, last time I did all of that. You know what? I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to change it a bit different. Like, I'm not going to be tied to that. Whatever it is, right? You can, whatever the problem is. It's really important to reflect what's working and what's not working. And anyone can do this. Because if you don't have proper stress management, you're going to burn out. It is what it is. It's if you don't know how to manage it, if you can't dissociate yourself from the outcome, all that kind of stuff, it's really important. And then the final thing is, and this one's just kind of like common sense, but I feel like it needs to be said again, is in a sales role, it's easy to work 24/7. Like we've been taught to be constantly contactable, always be there, outwork your competitor. Like that's the language we've been taught. Actually go opposite. Don't be available 24/7. Teach your clients why that's important. Put boundaries in. Talk to your clients about, you know, I'm starting at this time, I'm ending at this time, and be really strict with that. If you run a business, if you're a sales manager and you're listening to that, incorporate that. What that's going to do is a couple of things. You might be like, well, I'm going to lose clients. If you're going to lose clients because they want to contact your salespeople at 11 o'clock at night, do you want them as a client? Hell freaking no. You don't want a client that's choosing to burn out your sales team. No, you don't want that. So it's going to make sure that you get the right clients that are going to respect your team's boundaries. The other thing that you're going to do is you're going to allow your sales team to fill their cup. So they do have the energy, they do have the time, they can develop the new skills because they're not constantly trying to pour from an empty cup. And you're going to come across better as a supporter, all that kind of stuff. That is so important. You don't need to be on 24/7. I run my own business. I've run my own business for 6 years. And I can promise you this, I am not on 24/7 for my clients. And they know that because I'm like, if I burn out, how am I meant to help you? So like, think about it from that perspective. But they're my three things. I know they're a bit long-winded, but I think they're just they're the most impactful ones that I've seen.
Yeah, no, it's really awesome. There's so many good tips there. A lot that resonated with me actually. Like for example, I've had bosses who've like called me on holiday and you know, it's like, I don't know what the science is behind it, but if you're like on holiday and you have to like, even if you spend like half an hour dealing with a problem on your laptop, then that tends to like drip into the next day because you're still a little bit stressed, you're still thinking about work, and suddenly you've been away for 10 days, but you've actually only had like 2 days of a break.
Well, you haven't switched off. You haven't given your brain to process all the information that you've taken in to clear the slate so you have more capacity to take in more information. And this is why it's so important that sometimes we limit how much information we take in throughout the day, but that is so dangerous. Like I, like one of my greatest things, actually, the last role I quit, I was working for this company and I loved the job and I actually loved my manager. Like, do not get me wrong. There was no hatred here. There was no frustration. People would say it was toxic, but I loved it. Like I didn't see it as toxic. I enjoyed myself. But I could work 18-hour days. I could work 16-hour days. And I had given this company everything. I'd given them my heart and my soul to help them. My only request was I'm going to the Bahamas for 8 days. I have missed days off. I have done all of that. Just don't contact me for anything. All I want you to do is do not contact me at all while I'm away. I don't care what it's for because it's obviously not important enough. Like, yeah. You can deal with it. I trust you can deal with it. I trust you can deal with it. Within the first, and I said, and I wasn't joking, and I said to my manager, if you contact me while I'm away, I'm going to quit. I'm going to hand in my resignation the minute I come back. I promise you that. They thought I was joking. I wasn't. They contacted me, I think it was in the first 24, 48 hours, and it was something really benign. It was something like, can you do this with your emails? Can you check this email? And I was just like, I'm done. I'm quitting. And I did not care how much I loved that job. It was that complete disrespect of my boundary of I've given you everything. I've literally worked 14 days in a row without a break. And you can't give me 8 days of alone time in a year. I think people need to have that. But for me, it was like, I just don't want to be thinking about work while I'm away. Like this is my time to focus on me because I'm more than just my job. I'm a whole human being. So I think that's when we start thinking of ourselves, like I'm a whole human being. Like I've got my fiance, I'm like buying a house. I want like, you know, there's so many things. Like I'm a friend, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister. I'm all these things. And I need to make sure I have the space to do that. And everyone needs to think of themselves as a whole human being. You are not just your job. And it's so easy in sales to tie your self-worth and your happiness to your job. But it's a roller coaster you want to get off because it is champagnes and razor blades in sales. But you don't want to ride that because if you do ride that, you're going to be emotionally drained. You're going to have high highs, low lows. Make sure it's just a job. Like, yeah, get that outcome. Yeah, be competitive. But also, no, put it down. Keep that space for you so you can fill your cup so you can smash it the next day. That was a really long-winded way to say fill your cup.
I totally agree. I've got loads of other questions, but I'll save them for another time. But no, that's really awesome. Look, thanks so much for going through that. It's genuinely like I took so much from that actually, and I'm sure lots of people will hopefully be able, if they're on the verge of burnout or burning out as is at the moment, they can recognize that and start to put a stop to it. But so how does it work with working with you then? Like if someone's watched this and they're like, this sounds really awesome, I want to find out more, like what do they need to do?
So I've got three ways you can work with me. So if you are an individual and you want to do some one-on-one, like maybe you're a leader or an owner or a CEO, I do one-on-one coaching, like coaching for those people. If you are a company owner, HR person, salesperson, you think, you know what, can you come into my organization and come and do a talk? I do talks. I do workshops. I do work with a lot of sales teams in really different ways. So we can work together with that. But this year, what I've done is because I wanted to make it really accessible to a lot of people, I've just launched a membership. And with the membership, the goal with this is to support as many people as I possibly can, helping, giving them information that, like cutting through the fat, right? There's so much crappy information on the internet about stress, burnout, well-being, all like best practices and stuff like that. So I've taken everything I've learned from my own burnout, from working with organizations, working with CEOs, and created this membership where every month, every single month, there's a live webinar that you can come along to. If you can't come along to it through stress, we record it. And you can get access to that. We also do weekly coaching calls. So that means you can come in and it'll be a group setting. We're trying to make it so you can't see each other. So if you feel uncomfortable asking a question, we are going to make it private so you can ask a private question.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That way you can, so you can ask any kind of question and not feel, I don't believe there's any silly question when it comes to well-being because it's so confusing out there, but it might make you feel a bit better if you want to ask questions. So it's like group coaching calls. We've got other resources as well. So after every webinar, you get a worksheet so you can work through that. There's obviously peer-to-peer reviews, like not reviews, but peer-to-peer like conversations. And that's just a starting point. We really want to build this out. So my goal for the next 12 months is to start filming like bite-sized pieces of videos that you can jump on the platform. Gosh, I'm feeling really stressed out. What's something I can do quickly right now to help ease my stress? Or I'm really anxious. What's something that I can do in this moment that's going to help break my anxiety? Things like that. We really want to build it out over the next 12 months. And so that's sort of what the membership is. So if you want the membership and you want a little bit more information about it, contact me, connect with me, or you can go to my website, which is www.getyourshittogether.io. And it's spelled exactly the way you think it is, but it's .io, not .com. Someone stole the .com and they don't use it. I'm like, and then they're like,
oh, oh, really?
You can buy it off me. You can buy it off me for 50 grand. You're like, piss off, mate. If you are in, or if you want a little bit more information about the coaching or the me coming in and doing a talk at your organization, just head over to www.gystwellbeing.com. And that's GYST, G-Y-S-T. So it's the acronym of Get Your Shit Together.
Yeah.
Wellbeing.com. Come over there, look at that website. Otherwise, again, just reach out to me. I'm pretty chilled out.
Awesome. And do you post like stuff on LinkedIn as well? They can follow you on LinkedIn. Any other places they can follow you?
Yeah. So definitely follow me on LinkedIn. That's probably where I'm the most active. You've inspired me to do TikTok. So I've just started a TikTok. So you can find little things on there. That's a little bit more, it's not so much work stress. It's just stress in general and other little tips, like human stuff. Like we're not just talking about work. We're really talking about the whole human. And then check me, and that's just, you can, I think it's Katie Maycock, or it's Get Your Shit Together. If you, I think if you type in Katie Maycock, you'll find me.
I'll stick them in the bio in the comments.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah, so. Yeah. And then I've got an Instagram. And you know what? My Instagram game, it is slowly coming. Like I am working on Instagram. So I post more about my day on the story. So if you want to come and check out what the heck I do on a day as a stress and burnout coach, come and have a gander. I'm always happy to get a person to have a little gander at what I'm doing.
Cool. I'll put all that in the comments, the bio, wherever you're watching or listening to this. But yeah, Katie, look, thanks so much. It's been great, really insightful, and yeah, hopefully it's helped a lot of people.
Amazing. Thank you for having me.